We left off on Friday, so we were discussing the three categories of foods, that some are a little bit more meal-oriented foods, some a little bit less meal-oriented foods, and the Gemara develops for us three different categories. There are those foods that are completely covered by the bracha v'motzi. They are completely covered not only by the bracha rishon v'motzi, they're covered by the bracha parah brichas hamazon. They are literally part of the meal proper. And then the Gemara develops a second category of foods that they're part of the meal vis-a-vis brichas hamazon, but they still require their own bracha rishonah. And then there are a third category of foods that are so mufka, that are so separate and distinct from the meal proper, even though you are physically in the middle of the meal, halachically, you're not considered to be in the middle of the meal, and therefore they are not covered neither by the bracha rishonah nor by the bracha achronah. So the three categories exist. That was clear, the conclusion of the Gemara. What is unclear is what are the three categories? What are the examples of the three categories? So we started off the topic on Friday with Shitas Rashi. So Rashi explained that the first category, those foods that are so much an integral part of the meal that they are certainly covered both by bracha rishon and bracha achronah, are foods which are boiled melapis as a pas, foods that are eaten together with bread that are literally or figuratively spread onto the piece of bread. We gave the example of tuna fish sandwich, or you're eating a challah shoes with a piece of gefilte fish. Yes, for the Mahabish amongst us, the piece of herring, whatever the case may be, you're eating something clearly with the bread proper. So Rashi said those are covered by the bracha of both Rishon and Achrona. So Tosfos had a question against Rashi, is that, of course, Rashi is right, but it's so obvious that Rashi is right. Why does the Gemara even bother to tell us this? We already know this is covered by the regular age-old rule of Ikra V'Tofel. We know already for a long time the Mishnah that says, if you have a bowl of Cheerios and milk, you don't make a shaka on the milk. The milk is covered as tofel to the Cheerios. So to any food that's balalabas apas is going to be tofel to the bread itself. And therefore, I don't need Rav Papa, the late Amora, to teach us this halacha. It's not that Tosfos says Rashi did is wrong. Rashi Tosfos is just saying it's superfluous. That cannot be possible what the Rav Papa was talking about. So we spent most of the show on Friday trying to explain what Ikra V'Tofel maybe wouldn't apply here. Chiddush, and we spoke a little bit about the lumdus of Ikra V'Tofel. But Lamaisa Rashi Shita stands. So the first category, according to Rashi, was the foods that are boiled melapis as a pas. The question is, what are the subsequent categories according to Rashi? So here Rashi tells us, category number two, the foods that are part of Birchas HaMazon, but not part of HaMotzi, are other foods that are eaten at the meal, but they're not quite lapis lapas. So we gave some examples on Friday. Cholent, kugel, those kinds of foods that I can't say it's not dessert. On the other hand, it's not, you generally don't make a cholent sandwich, you make a kugel sandwich. So therefore, according to Rashi, those foods would require their own bracha. So that is, in fact, Tosfos claims is not correct. The first category of Rashi was superfluous. The second category is not correct. Tosfos, there's no way that those foods would require a new bracha. Tosfos says, rise for the Gemara. We know Ma'aseh B'chol Yom. Nobody follows the sheet of Rashi. We assume a guy washes Friday night for a Suda. So when he comes to the chicken and the kugel, he doesn't start making new brachas. But Rashi says, yeah, Rashi would hold that one would be required to make a new bracha. And what is that third category according to Rashi? The foods that are so different and distinct from the meal that you have to make a bracha, both Rishona and a bracha Acharona. So comes Rashi and says, those are desserts, those are sweet fruit, those are fruit, those things which are not only are they not bala lapis apas, they're not even bala haspia, they're not there to fill you up, they're there simply for sweetness, for dessert, for at the end of the meal. They are so not part of the meal, says Rashi, that you have to make a bracha rishon on them and a bracha achron on them. So according to Rashi, we have three categories. The first was lapis lapas. The middle is foods that are coming to fill you up. And the third is foods that are coming as sweet for dessert towards the end of the meal. That is Shita's Rashi in the sugya. So needless to say, we do not accept Rashi's Shita. Not mitchilah. We also hold there are three categories, but we have three very, very different presentations of what those categories are. Oh, that's an even trickier question, because if you had already benched, then you would have to start to ask yourself, wait a second, I just benched? I'm going to at least yotze b'di'evet. The answer is probably not even yotze b'di'evet. Rashi would probably have to make the bracha achronah first, right? Most probably. So, okay, so that's a loaded question. So that could either avoid bracha's problems or create bracha's problems. So you're right. It avoids certain shilas and sveikas and luchas brachas, but it opens up a potential issue of a brach shed at tzricha. So I'll tell you a secret. When I was a little boy, that's what we did also. I think that a lot of people in Europe used to do that. And it's actually based on a shlah kodesh. The shlah goes back hundreds of years ago. I mean, I cannot tell you what desserts were the shlah. I imagine they were not quite on par with what we're eating today. But the shlah was originally in Germany. They named it there, Tisrael. So there are very, very few people who got as an after the name HaKadosh, you know, a few of them. The shlah was one of them. So you can imagine, it says world. So the shlah HaKadosh, the only shlah, is quoted as saying that even though the Gemara says that you're not supposed to make a brachash in a tzricha, you're not supposed to necessitate, you're not supposed to create situations of making new brachas that weren't really necessary to make in the first place. So so comes the shlon and says, when is that true? That's not on Shabbos or Yontif. On Shabbos and Yontif, you can make brachas in a tzricha. Why should that be so? So the shlon explains that the Gemara tells us that we're supposed to make 100 brachas every day. The problem is that on Shabbos and Yontif, we're short a lot of those brachas because Hashmon Esrei is significantly less. So therefore, the Shlah said, in order to make up the 100 brachas, so you can make, quote unquote, brachas at tzricha. You can't make brachas batalas. Brachas batalas means that a guy makes a borei pri ha'eitz on a piece of chicken. That's not a brachas at tzricha. That's a brachas batalas. A brachas at tzricha means is that, let's say, I made a borei pri ha'eitz on an apple, and then I was planning on eating two apples, and I make a borei nefashos, and I make another borei pri ha'eitz. So it's not a brachas batalas, because at the end of the day, the borei nefashos was correct. And the borei pri ha'eitz is not correct, but I created a necessity for an unnecessary bracha. So that's like a bizayon. You're not supposed to do that. Brachas are not so flippantly. You just said, we'll play games. We add a few brachas here and there. So that's what the bracha shed tzricha. So the shlah claims that bracha shed tzricha is not a problem on Shabbos and Yontif. So the problem with that shlah is that the Magen Avraham points out it seems to be against the Gemara. The Gemara says in Masechet Sota that when the Kohen Gadol would lay on Yom Kippur, the Mishnah says that they would have a special Kriyas HaTorah on Yom Kippur. It was the end of the Avodas Hayom, so the Kohen Gadol would lay. So the Kohen Gadol would lay partially for Bachar Imos, then he would lay to Bashar Emor, whole story. So the Gemara says that he would read certain Pesukim Baal Peh, because they didn't want to bring out a second Sefer Torah. Why didn't they want to bring out a second Sefer Torah? So one of the reasons the Gemara says this is because it's bringing out another Sefer Torah is going to necessitate in another bracha, and that's going to be like a bracha she'en a tzricha. So it's better not to have too many extra brachas. So the Magen Avraham asks, that's Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is the day where we're missing the most brachas possible. Not only do we have shortish banesreis, we don't have brachas on food. So we're searching with, the shtibles, they're walking around passing the sum around the most of the day in Yom Kippur. As I was always like very weary. I know it's an age-old minhag from Europe. They used to do that. I'm very weary of that. I'm like a little davening the elam. So a guy sticks a piece of something in my nose. I'm trying to. I'm holding by the chasima sadir. Michael's out on the bar. And between you, it's not going to make the tally anyway. Anyway, you're not gonna, so now you're up to brachas 38 instead of 37. So you're not going to make that far anyway. Whatever it is. So comes the Magen Avraham and says, the Gemara says the favor says the problem of Raksha Tzricha, even on Yom Kippur, so Kavachim, even on Shabbos. That's a difficult shlah. But notwithstanding that, there was a minig in many communities that used to have dessert on Shabbos after benching in order to chop around a couple of extra brachas. But if you drain long enough, but it's a rachman of some people's nap, rachman of some people's learning. I mean, they stop kiddush. Those men always stop kiddushes. Yeah. It's another stuff, right? They make a set, right. They make a double shalshut, right? That's right. It also has it's a lacking problems to win. They were eating shalshut too early. So anyway, I'm getting back to that story. Tais is going to tell about the Viennese table. We're going to get there in a second. The Viennese table, okay. So getting back to bracha stories, I think, it's chaval that we have the shiur before davening. Otherwise, we could have after davening, we could have a whole array of foods and we could have little show-offs, little demonstrations over here. So we get sponsors. Okay, so back to three categories. So we know Rashi's three categories, and we know that Tosfos is going to take issue with Rashi's categories. We know Tosfos already began to take issues with them. So what are the categories according to Tosfos? Let's continue. Back to the fifth of the Ma'amar Kamos. The Tosfos says, "Alkein Birushri, Dvarim Avoyim Machlasu B'Sochasuda." Category number one, Kloimar. Whenever you see the word Kloimar, you know we're in for trouble. Kloimar, Haregilim Lovo Machlasu D'Bepas says Tosfos anything that's part of the meal. Everybody knows these are bread-oriented foods. It doesn't mean we're making a sandwich. This is not Rashi making a tuna fish sandwich. But Dvarim Aboy Makasur Rapas, Shiragilim Ochra Rapas, Kigon, Basar, Vidagim, Vechol Mine Kedera, other kinds of cooked dishes, to include your kugels and your cholins, Ve'evim B'sachasuda, and if they're brought into the meal, Ein Te'unim Brach Lefneim Uliachareim, says Tosos, even though you personally didn't eat this piece of food with bread, doesn't matter. Since they're coming about because of the bread, the meal, that's considered to be bar machlas asuda. Tosos leaves out a key word that Talmid Rabbeinu Yonah added on, that they're bar lahasbia. They're coming to fill you up. The goal of eating a piece of kugel, nobody would say, I want that, unless the sweet lox kugel, maybe that's a different story. But potato kugel, no one's eating a potato kugel for sweetness. You're eating a potato kugel because you're hungry, whatever. You're having sweet potatoes, you're having bowl of cholent. Even if you're not necessarily making a cholent sandwich, but those foods are coming lahasbiya, says Rabbeinu Yonah, and therefore they are an integral part of the meal, and they are covered both by bracha rishona and bracha achrona. Aval, now comes category number two. The varm she'ein darkei lavo b'socha suda, foods that are not associated with the integral part of the meal, or Rabbeinu Yonah adds on the key word, they're not but lasbia. Kigon, tamarim, urimonim, ushak hapeiros, the dates, and the pomegranates, other fruits. She'ain regim lavas ben esapas. Nobody makes a pomegranate sandwich. To unim brach lefneim. The cave and the labishim liftan, also since they're not coming, the lafis as a pas, ain't a patros rosson. So the bread cannot possibly be exempt them, and therefore you have to recite a new bracha, a bracha rishona, not a bracha achrona. This is where we walk the tightrope, according to Tosfos, that they're still covered by the brachas of mazon, but they're not covered by the bracha rishona. But now there's the missing case. So according to Tosfos, we've exhausted all possibilities. The dvar malaf is a pas, which is category number one. According to Tosfos, is not one of the categories. That's the Mishnah. Category number two, that was Lahasbiya, that was Tosfos category number one. Category number three of Rashi is Tosfos number two. So what's number three? What is the magic? What's the phantom third category that is so mufka, that is so separate and distinct from the meal, that it warrants both a bracha rishona and a bracha achrona? So Tosfos in the sixth of the Marmikomis continues, in the next Tosfos, Tosfos gives you what is that magic third category. So Tosa says that, let's take a look at the end of the first line, Rachi Perusha, the sixth of the Ramakamos, end of the first line, Imeviu Dvarim Sheskarnu Achas Uta. All of our foods, anything we've been talking about up till now, whether the kugels, whether the cholins, whether the fruits, but they were brought after the meal. What does that mean after the meal? Perush? La'acha Shemoshchu Esyedeya Min HaPas. You have stopped eating bread entirely. You took the bread off the table. The bread's gone. So says Tosfos, but medav amamurim, we could fetch and say, no, it's still covered by the bread a little bit. That's if the bread is still there. So there's still a piece of challah on the table. Your matzahs are still there. So even though I'm not really eating the bread anymore, but it's still there. But it's mashchi yedeim in a pas. The bread is totally removed already. Shuv ein a pas potros and klal. Bread doesn't exempt it at all. Habik moshe ochem beloshem suda. That's like taking a piece of food at 3 o'clock in the afternoon without bread. Ubein dvar avrigil lavo machlas asuda bein dvar shemigil machlas asuda to unim brach lefneim uliachareim. Says Tosfos, whether it's a bowl of cholent at the end, whether it's a piece of kugel at the end, whether it's a bowl of fruit at the end, they're all not at all covered by the bread, not at the beginning nor at the end. So Tosfos has discovered the phantom third category. So now Tosfos makes the following observation. Ashov, today, ein lanu din zeh, this din doesn't apply. The third category just simply doesn't exist. The reality of Mitzias is our eating patterns, our eating habits have changed. The ein minig shalana limshach edena min apas klal of the achav erchaz amazon. So says Tosfos, we always have bread at the table. People are still munching away on bread. Says Tosfos, this is not like a halachic change. Halacha wasn't changed. It's just that the eating patterns of France in the 1100s are not the same as Babylonia of the 400s. So Tosa says, in Babylonia, they would take the bread off the table. In France, they keep the bread on the table. And therefore, since not only do they keep it on the table, we still eat it. We still munch on bread. It's not inconceivable to munch a little bit on bread towards the end of the meal. Therefore, we do not have this third category according to Shitzat Tosa. So there are other Rishonim who also describe this third category. They describe it slightly different. There are Rabbeinu Yonah has also the three categories of Tosas, but unlike Tosas' emphasis on ain't on a masalkas yedenim rapas, Rabbeinu Yonah says the siluk, the removal, is out of the bread, but actually the whole table. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, this we already know. We know this from Hilchos Pesach, right? If we let us say there. In the olden days, they didn't sit and have sitting around the table like we do today. Everybody had their very small kind of trays. Everybody had their own private, personal kind of a table. That's why there are certain halachas that appear in the Gemara and that just don't play out as much as that in terms of the setup. Let's say Lamosha by the Seder. We mentioned this, I think, before Pesach. The Mishnah says in Maseches Pesachim that right before you get to the Manashtada, so you okres hashulchan. So you remove the table. Why do you remove the table? So the children shouldn't ask questions. They went, what are you doing? We're all dressed up. They told us we can't eat all day. We haven't eaten anything in the last week. And now we're sitting down to this big grandiose festive meal. Now they move the table out. So the kid says, why did I take a nap all day today? There's nothing for supper tonight. That's what it means. Literally, the kid should ask, why are you eating at the table? So the Rishonim point out, how you do that, this man? In the olden days, the Balabas had a little table in front of him. Maybe everyone had a little tray in front of them. So you come over, you pick up the table, move it over. Today, what? You have a table that sits 16 people. You're going to pick up the whole table and move it to the kitchen. That's not happening. So the Rishonim say, we have a minhag today that's to aim that practice of the Gemara. So the minhag that we do is we take the Seder plate. We pick up the Seder plate, we put it on the side, we hold it in our lap, we hide it a little bit. That's the modern day. I mean, modern day for the days of Rishonim, that's the modern day equivalent of Ogres HaShulchan. I told a story before Pesach, a year or two ago. So I did that. I took the Seder plate off the table. So my grandson at the time was maybe like 3 years old. So he says to me, why'd you take the plate away from the table? I got so excited. So I remember somebody said, don't worry, just ask Manishtana. No. The whole point was that he should ask that question and I should answer that question. Manishtana is like a default. The Mishnah says that never, if nobody asks any questions, so we have to make questions. Rav Chaim said that in order to fulfill secrets, he was trying to ask me, so it has to be a sipa with questions and answers. So if you have personal questions, that's great. If Nebuch, no one has any smart questions to ask, at least let the kid read these four questions. But if the kid asks the question, you should answer the question first. That's the eco mitzvah, see what it is with Tribe. But anyway, back to that story. Well, let's tell the Rishonim, right? That's it. So the it's not even clear, the Mishnah says that the Moskul of Kos Sheni, the Kana Ben Shoel, Manishtar Elazar B'Kolela. So if I'm not mistaken, I think the Rambam has the Girsa in the Mishnah, Moskul of Kos Sheni, the Kana Ben Shoel, the Omer Manishtana. The Rambam seems to say Manishtana, not even questions. It's the biggest fake out. There are no four questions. It's not even questions. Kana Ben Shoel means let the kid ask whatever questions he wants to say, and then we begin the answer. Oh, Manishtana is a statement of fact. It's not Manishtana. Why is it that different? It is Manishtana. It's an exclamation point. How different is this night? And how different is it? It's different than the following four ways. On every night we do this, and tonight we do this. So we usually think the kid asks, Tate, ich bin fragen, the vier kashes, nicht vier kashes, nicht vier, drei kashes. There are four statements of fact. The questions were the personal questions that the child asked. Now, I don't want to be a downer on the Manishtana, but that's the Rambam's presentation of the quote-unquote Manishtana that seems to be there. I'll share a story. My wife never likes when I tell these stories, but I said, come on, we all know where I grew up. So I remember watching the movie, The Ten Commandments. I imagine everybody here probably saw it at least 10 times. So Charles and Heston. So I remember on that first Leil HaSeder, my wife always she says, why do you tell stories about watching movies when you were a kid to your kids? I said, they all knew that I watched movies when I was a kid. I said, change that. So I still sit, Adi Yamazah, I sit down for the Leil HaSeder. Those are the images that I still think of power as Yul Brynner. So anyway, so I remember Hav Melech Hadas, the Moshe Rabbeinu, was sitting around the table, and his kid is sitting around, and Moshe's pouring a bottle of wine. It was a keg of wine, so he's pouring a bottle of wine, and the child gets up and he says, "Father, why is this night different from all other nights?" So like you, it's a little bit of play. You know, you take the Lashon HaMishnah of the Marishtana and stick it into Yetzias Mitzrayim of 2,000 years before. It's a little bit of, there's a phrase for that in literature. I forgot what it is. When you're writing a story in the year 1900 and you're using, talk about cell phones. I forgot, there's an official term for that. When things are a little bit out of order. So you're taking a Nusach of the Tanoim and you're slipping it back to Moshe Rabbeinu, a little bit funny. Anyway, getting back to that story. So the Rishonim point out there are other differences that are a result of this change. We have a different style. The table story is a different style. There's a din, there's a Mishnah that says in Masechet Shabbos that when a woman is a nida, so a husband's not allowed to eat together with her. You're not allowed to eat together because the hergel dover. Afraid they could eat, they're too cozy, too comfortable together. It may lead to day averus. So there was a machlekes rishon. What do the words mean? So there was some rishonim. The Rambam says that it means they're not allowed to eat out of the same plate together. They can't be sitting together and munching on a bowl of popcorn together. But they're sitting at a table together, so that's a big deal. Nothing's going to go wrong. And others, most of the rishonim say no, it's not true. And even if they're eating at the same table, that's a problem. So the Rush writes that the second shot is right, not like the Rambam, that you're not allowed to eat at the same table. But the Rush says he thinks this din doesn't apply to his banaza. Because when did it apply? When you're eating in a little tray, they're hovering over together, sitting together, eating out of a little, you know, in one little tray. So that's already a little bit too close for them. I mean, it's at the end of the table. She's at the other end of the table. They're 30 feet away from each other. What kind of hergel dover is that going to be? So the Rush also invokes that image that our tables are so different than the days of Chazal. Every time you see a halacha that deals with the table, so you have to ask yourself, does that halacha carry over as much as that? And Chazdida, I'm meaning is lahachma even on that. We also try, but that we're leaving out the details of Chazdida right now. But again, so he so told me already. Yoni writes that in the olden days, so the tables were so easily removed. So when they would finish the basic meal, they would take the table away. They'd remove the, you know, the easily removable tray, and then they would start bringing out some fruit or something. So Ben Yonah says, "Ooh, that's already. It's not doing the meal. The meal's over. The table's gone. The meal's over now. This is nashing time. This is popcorn time. This is not meal time. So then you have to make a bracha. We show a bracha in front of his manas. That's his Ben Yonah. It's the same table. So whether the bread wasn't removed, the table hasn't been moved, and therefore the halacha doesn't apply bisman hazeh. So bein lefi Taisus, bein lefi Rabbeinu Yonah, they are talking about this third category of so end of meal that the game is over. Neither bracha rishon nor bracha is going to help you. This is so mufka, so separate and distinct from the meal. They're talking about nuances. Is it a function of are you still munching the bread? Is it a function of the individual tables there? But the common denominator between Taisa and Rabbeinu Yonah is that this whole third category doesn't exist for Zman HaZeh. So we thought... Yeah. So we usually present a benching. Right. We many have that practice. Right? I don't know so much in terms of the bracha corona, in terms of the issue of the Taisa. It's more of an issue of benches. Most try to have some bread at the table when you bench. Right. Right. Good point. So the question is, does any of this have any relevance? Does this third category make any presentation for Zman HaZeh? So the days of the Gemara, it was prevalent. And Taisus lived in France. The radio lived in Spain. So apparently the eating habits had changed radically in most of Europe. Has anything almost reverted back to Bizman Chazal in the following sense? So this was the famous Shaila that was raised already years ago. That was the issue with mention of the Viennese tables. He says, is a Viennese table almost like the halakhic equivalent of this category number three? So with those who wanted to question it, maybe it is. Maybe if you think about it, you know, it's totally mufka for the rest of the meal. You're going out to another room, and there's no bread. I mean, last to check what's on the Viennese table, there's a lot of stuff, but bread, there's no like piece of challah there. For Hamish of Viennese table, piece of challah there. There's no challah there. So the question is that, have we finally reached the point of the third category that the Rishonim set for hundreds of years? The Shulchan Aruch Weitz doesn't exist anymore. Hasn't made a comeback a little bit in terms of the Viennese table. I think that most poskim still assume that not, that im kol zeh, especially according to Rabbi Yonah, we haven't removed the table. Rabbi Yonah's image was, we literally took the table away and brought out a new table. Here, the original table is there, it's just we brought out a new table, but it's not that we cleared off the table. Maybe the more of the equivalent of Rabbi Yonah would make not so much the Viennese tables, would be like some of the Hamish or wedding halls. You know, they'll start clearing it out, you know, before the night's over. Sometimes it's not clear, you have to make more room for dancing. Sometimes it's about clear because they don't want to pay the workers extra. And I mean, again, different place. These are things you don't usually see this in the marina, but like in some, in certain, you know, certain places, they're by 10:30 already, they're ready rolling out the tables. So, and then what happens? Then they bring out a tub of ice cream for dessert. So, you can argue that the meal is mamish over at that point. So, so very often these places, if you stay long enough, there is no back, there's no table. Yeah, there's no table. I've been at weddings where caught the benching, there's mamish no table. They clear out. What?
Rebbe?
Yeah, tables are gone. Yeah, tables are mamish gone. Yeah.
Rebbe, the first toast was Rabbi Yon said that the lashon was that the pas was some that created the suda.
Right.
So maybe the exception would be like Shabbos in a wedding where it's not the meal, you're having the bread because you're creating the suda because of the bread. And everything is there because you have to have the bread, because you have to have a suda. So everything becomes inclusive regardless.
Right, that's a question, but I mean, the Gemara here doesn't distinguish. Tosos doesn't talk that with the only talking during the week at Shabbos. You're right, that model is correct, the distinction model is correct, but I'm not sure that in the Rishonim you see that distinction practically. I don't know, I'm not sure. And I think that the Olam, the standard bit of Olam is nobody assumes that we bumped into this third category. I think we just by default assume this third category doesn't really exist anymore. But the second category potentially does exist. Now, that second category is important for us because Tosos' second category did necessitate a bracha rishona. So even leaving out weddings, leaving out moving around tables and eating tables, your regular Shabbos meal, a person finishes his meal, and now they bring out some fruit. They bring out a fruit platter. So wait a second, the fruit platter, according to Tosos, Rabbi Yonah the Shulchan Aruch, is at least category number two, which l'chora at first glance should necessitate at least a bracha rishona. So we'll have to pick up this up tomorrow. Is that really true? Is that the proper protocol in terms of, at that point in the meal, does it really make sense to make that bracha on dessert at the end of our meals? Is it really the lack of proof of category number two? We'll try to pick up this tomorrow. Oh, it's right. Tomorrow's the Shkodesh. Yeah, tomorrow's the Shkodesh. So we'll start the Shkodesh Shalom. So we'll 10 minutes early. Okay.
Thank you.